Good morning. I love that story, The Invisible String. What do we do with loss and grief? And what does grief do with us? Sooner or later, almost all of us fall into the pit. Someone we love dies, and we are left alone to get over it. And we can lose so much in a lifetime: relationships, jobs, health, abilities, homes. Some losses are part of life processes: aging, graduating, friends moving away. Some come from choices we make: retirement, moving, going to school. Caught up in the excitement of a new choice, we might not even notice that we are grieving what we left behind until one of grief's sneak attacks blindsides us. A familiar smell, music, a photograph. Or an old grief breaks through a new loss. You maybe don't understand why you feel so brokenhearted after losing your job until you remember, oh, my mother died about this time a year ago. Now, this sermon is going to focus on the grief we experience after the death of a loved one. But all losses tend to carry some of the same kinds of resonances as the death of a loved one, even if maybe not with the same intensity. So I hope that you'll be able to translate, if you will, if you have experienced or are experiencing a different kind of loss from what I'm going to say about the loss of a loved one. So what do we do with this most dreaded of life's passages, those heart and gut-wrenching emotions? How do we get over it? Anne Lamott tells us that one common response doesn't work. All those years, she says, I fell for the great palace lie that grief should be gotten over as quickly as possible and as privately. But what I've discovered is that the lifelong fear of grief keeps us in a barren, isolated place, and that only grieving can heal grief. If you have been through it, perhaps you resonate with these words from Gail Godwin. I could write a handbook on mourning, that ache you treasure, that unique, wrenching ache that you hoard, you go looking for it. Contrary to what so many people try to tell you, you want to dwell in its presence. You want to protect it from this heartless future time they promise you is on its way. You want to dwell in the presence of the pain, the mystery of its hold on you. End of quote. Leaving our grief behind, we fear, will end the relationship with the one we love who is gone. However we react, it is exhausting. Whether you fight or give in, grieve openly or in private, keep busy or sit and cry, grief uses you up. It takes you down to the bone and it wears you out. My own deepest acquaintance with grief so far occurred more than 30 years ago, when the man I loved and expected to marry died suddenly of a heart attack. I had grieved before, and as a minister in training, I had stood with others in their grief, but nothing prepared me for what lay ahead. I don't think anything ever does. Even people who have lost someone who's been dying for a long time, even when death brings relief, will say, I wasn't ready for it. Like all good ministerial students, I knew the predictable stages discovered by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross: shock and denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. I'd be functioning normally in a few months, I thought, and over it in a year or so. How humbled I became. The stages did not behave. They arrived out of order, tumbled over each other, and overlapped. And acceptance did not arrive when expected. People made sage predictions about things that would happen that never happened, and things happened that no one predicted. Among the bereaved people I've known, I've seen a number of ways of grieving. I kept up with my schoolwork, my internship, and care for my children, but a friend whose husband died at the same time had to take a leave of absence from her teaching job. Now, she was 20 years older than I, and I had kids, and I was preparing for a career which required my continuing presence. She did what she needed. I did what I needed. People told me, oh, you're avoiding grieving. But they didn't see me when I went home. Some partners sort and give away their loved one's belongings as a sort of last gift they can give. Others cannot bear to part with those belongings for a long time. I learned to accept such differences and to say to others in grief, don't let anyone, even me, tell you what you should be doing or experiencing. Just do it and experience it. You know, you usually find that people say things to make you feel better, which make you feel completely misunderstood. It helps to translate. I know how you feel means I don't want to open myself up to how bad you're actually feeling. You're strong, you'll get through this, often means what you're going through scares me. I hope you can deal with it on your own. At least your loss isn't as bad as mine was, means, oh, it's said, it is. I can't bear to believe you're suffering as much as I did. You can still have another baby. Oh, you'll get another cat right away, of course. That is meant to diminish the severity of your loss. It's human nature to want to minimize or eliminate another's pain because we don't want to experience it ourselves. Why should we? Some will try to explain the reason for your loss. You're being tested by God. Or this loss is meant to teach you or to save you for something bigger and better. One friend actually told me that my loved one's death meant that I wasn't supposed to marry him. So what did she think his death was supposed to mean to him? I don't believe that God or the cosmos does bad things to people for inscrutable reasons, or for any reason. Maybe you do learn something from your loss. Maybe another door does open in time. But these are not the cause or the reason for your loss. They're a way to rationalize pain. Having reasons makes us feel less lost and terrified. One of the most helpful comments I received was from Sister Mary Hennessy, a divinity school advisor, and she offered the prayer at my ordination, a Roman Catholic. She looked me right in the eye very intently, and she said, Don't look for any meaning in this, Karen. I was drowning in everyone's cruel explanations, and Mary just said, no reason. You don't have to understand this. We don't need to understand. We have to endure. Endure. And that's hard enough. When you are grieving, you deserve a gold star for getting up in the morning. You might want to put one on your calendar. The other thing that helps, I think, when people say unhelpful things, is to remember that they truly intend to comfort you. Realizing that is what let me forgive the unhelpful comments. That, and remembering how hard it is for me to know what to say. It's hard. In the face of someone's unfathomable loss and pain. Sooner or later, we become all humans in this life together, experiencing the same kinds of joys and sorrows and mysteries we can't begin to comprehend. The most healing balm is not explanations, comparisons, or reassurance. None of those things are true when grief is happening to you. What does soften the gut-wrenching blow, at least in the moment, happens when someone cares enough to be unafraid in the presence of your pain, to just be with you. In the Bible, the book of Job, when Job loses his children, his cattle, his crops, and his body is covered with sores, his friends come to see him. Now, you've heard the expression Job's comforters. It is meant ironically because they drive Job nuts, haranguing him with explanations for his suffering. But before that, and you seldom hear this piece of the story, it's important. When they first get there, they are so stunned by the enormity of his suffering that they simply sit with him in silence for 7 days, and they do not say a word. They sit with him. Then they were true comforters. A member of my internship committee called to say that he didn't know what to say, but he and his wife just wanted me to know that they loved me. They loved me. That was all and all I needed. I can't tell you how powerful those simple words were and the fact that he actually picked up the phone to make contact with me. Sometimes it takes no words. A hand on yours, a look, a bit of help with something practical. Despite my calling, I know now that a casserole is better medicine than a sermon, or maybe a plate of brownies. Sometimes grief does seem to disable a person, though, from normal life for an unhealthy length of time. If you're still not able to resume normal activity after several years, you may be in a depression and you do deserve help with it. But more often the danger is that we dash through our grief with our eyes and our hearts shut as tightly as possible. This is Anne Lamott's great palace lie, that grief should be gotten over as quickly as possible and as privately. Some try to quickly replace a beloved person or way of life with another. But I am with Parker Palmer in this, who says we must, quote, allow death to hollow us out in order to be filled with life's presence, end of quote. Grief scoops us out, empties us, and opens us up. If we allow this emptying, we find more room in our soul than was there before. And when there's more room in our soul, we will be filled with things we haven't imagined. I can't say what they'll be for you, because this is particular for each individual. I can only tell you, having lived through it more than once, that I have faith in the process. Now, having just said that we need to allow the process of grief to happen, I have to say, too, that sometimes we are a bit too earnest about what gets called processing our grief, as if you could throw grief in a blender and whip it up and drink it down and be done with it, digest it, it's over. The essential task of grieving is not so much active processing as simply day by day learning how to live with a big new hole in our life. Sometimes it entails therapy, sometimes a temporary medication for a good night's sleep. Sometimes it's listening to the quiet song of your own heart, learning to sing solo instead of duets. And sometimes grief swamps the faith which has sustained us. We might feel the victim of cosmic or divine betrayal, as in, I can't believe in a God that would let this happen. In a World War II concentration camp, Elie Wiesel had to witness the hanging of a boy. Where is God now? Bitterly asked the person next to him. And he replied, God is there in that boy. His image of God did not explain or soften the horror, but it did encompass it. It said, in essence, that God is big enough to hold that boy and his death. I'm reminded of Psalm 23 in the Hebrew scripture. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Grief can shatter our faith, but it can also create space for a larger and a deeper faith. We may find the divine in places we hadn't imagined it could be. Death made room in me for a new concept of life and death. It came suddenly and unexpectedly as I stood alone in that horrible new emptiness. The old expression that death is a part of life, true enough from the perspective of being within this life, suddenly seemed, on a cosmic scale, to get it backward. The life we live on Earth, I sensed, is part of a continual unfolding and part of something much bigger than either life or death. And I don't know what that is. And it's okay not to know. We are not in control of grief. Grief takes us up and rips us open and throws us down broken for a while. There may be physical symptoms, depression, confusion, and there's almost certain to be exhaustion. But in order to reorient ourselves and become whole again, we have to give ourselves over to it. We have to trust. A widow of some years put it well when she told me, you don't get over loss, you just get used to it. The hole in our life remains, but it softens with acquaintance. We lose the person, but we don't lose the relationship. As we continue to live, the relationship lives in us. We slowly find a new way to to live in the world without the physical presence we treasured. But who the person was, what the person was to us, becomes integrated into who we are. It is a spiritual unfolding. Friends, we do not process grief, really. Grief processes us. And like any process, it turns us into something different from what we were before. We do not get over grief. We only get through it by grieving, by going through it. If we are faithful to our grief, it will change us, and we will bring to life something we never had before, a transformed self, a self with new power and wholeness. And with power and wholeness, we may bless the world. Let us take some moments of silence together now.